We're talking now with Ross Wilson, the CEO of the Texas Cattle Feeders Association. And Ross, your annual meeting's underway right now. As you've talked to a lot of producers, you know, a lot of your feedlot operators and other cattle producers here gathered for the TCFA meeting. What's the mood? What's the attitude as you talk with these guys?
Ron, the mood is greatly improved over the last couple of years. It's not back to where it was pre-2010, 2011, what time frame you want to pick. But the decline in corn prices, well, first let me say the rains. The rains, the grass that has grown this summer and fall, it's been a godsend, obviously. And it's restored some faith that we maybe are coming out of this drought, even if we're not out of it completely, which we're not. We've got grass, we've got some wheat pastures we were talking just a moment ago in some areas that's going to be very helpful. And then you add to that the really tremendous corn crop that we're harvesting in this country and the decline in corn prices. And so for the first time in probably 2.5 years for a lot of our members, they're talking about profitability in Q4. And also some profitability into Q1 and Q2 of next year. Now, after you get beyond that, it becomes a little bit cloudy on their crystal balls and where it may go. But we've had a nice reprieve. Let's just hope that it continues.
I guess what, 3, 4, 5 years ago, you know, talking $4 corn, we thought, well, that's a little pricey. But, boy, we really like $4 corn now.
$4 corn is very cheap. I guess most, if not a lot of things, become relative, and that's what we have with the corn market. When it got up to $8, $9 a bushel, and as you know, what happened is that people really started pulling back, modifying their rations. They had to be competitive, so they put corn byproducts in. They were still using corn in some form or fashion, plus other commodities, but the percentage of flaked corn that we have known historically in cattle feeding rations went down significantly for some people. It depends some, obviously, on location. We have not turned the corner yet on the competition for corn from ethanol. As you heard some of our speakers this morning, we're beginning to see a little bit of a light at the end of that tunnel, that maybe we could get a modification of the RFS mandate, not an elimination. And we're not asking for a complete elimination in the short run. We understand that there's got to be a phase out. But maybe some modification. EPA has some proposals over at OMB that would provide some additional relief. But we've got to pull that subsidized demand back some and get, you know, we're at 40 to 45, maybe going at some point to 50, but probably in that 45% range of the entire corn crop going into biofuels production. And if that's what the market drives, that's great. But get the government out of that that driver's seat.
A couple of things that were brought up during the morning session. One that we heard a couple of times: country of origin labeling. We heard Mr. Rove talk a little bit about this. Politically, we might see some momentum moving in that direction. What do you feel? Are you feeling a little more? Little more hopeful at this point?
We are more hopeful on mandatory cool. There's three avenues, as you know, that are being worked with. The long-term process that's still underway is the WTO process. You know, ruled against it twice, and now is reviewing the new USDA rule that came out this fall. That's a protracted, longer than we would prefer process. You know, it could take 12 months, could take 18. The other one is the lawsuit that the industry has filed. Unfortunately, the temporary restraining order on immediate implementation was denied. It's now before by the judge. It's now before an appellate bench. So we'll hear something from those judges at some point. The lawsuit on its own merits has some very good points in it. So even if there's not a temporary injunction on implementation, which obviously the rule is being implemented as we speak, the new rule, and it's going to continue to add costs, we'll go on with the lawsuit. Our permanent fix is the statute. We need to change the statute. That's where the Farm Bill comes into play. And the odds are looking really good. I don't know if you saw any of the opening statements on the Farm Bill Conference Committee, but there were a number of members that specifically noted the problems with mandatory cool and that it needs to go away. Again, it's one of those issues. If the market tells us that that's what we need to do, and if the consumers are willing to pay for it, then let's respond to it. But let's don't just layer on what now has been proven in the K-State study of last fall. Earlier this year proved that, you know, we're not selling any more beef at any higher prices because of mandatory cool. All we've done is add costs on. So the bottom line answer to your question is we are more optimistic. As you know, this continues to be a very fluid process. The biggest question is, will we get a farm bill? And you've been following that closely, as have all of us. And hopefully they can find a middle ground on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which has got to get resolved before we can move the rest of the Farm Bill forward, which is what we're all interested in, or the other parts of the Farm Bill.
Of course, Mr. Neugebauer was the one that had the placeholder in there. Yes. On the House side that gives it the opportunity to talk about this thing.
That's exactly right. Randy's been great. Dennis Costas from California, Mike Conaway from Texas, Frank Lucas has been helpful. Several of the senators that have spoken up in opposition to mandatory cool. So there's quite a bit of support out there. It's just a question of, are we going to get the nutrition title resolved so we can go ahead and ultimately pass a farm bill? We are optimistic that before the year ends, we will have a farm bill. Today, we are optimistic that there will be a resolution to mandatory cool in that farm bill.
And what, perhaps turn it into a voluntary program? Yes. Is that what would be maybe middle ground?
Yeah, yes, sir. Country of origin labeling does not have to go away. For those markets and those consumers that want that information, it should be provided. And a voluntary program can do that. We have long been a supporter of a voluntary country of origin labeling, but not a mandatory that just purely adds cost to the beef system. And as you know, the discounts, well, I can cite you packers that are discounting cattle $50 a head, $45 a head, and then the additional costs that they get put on their system when in processing and packing, segregation, the new labels, et cetera. You know all that. So, yes, it can be a voluntary cool. It just doesn't need to be mandatory.
A couple of things regarding the industry itself, Ross. As you come into the fall season, we've obviously seen at least one packing plant pulled out of the mix here in the Southern Plains. We've heard that at least one feed yard has been targeted for closure. Where are we really, given these tight number of cattle that we have right now in our inventory?
Well, the tight inventory that we've been dealing with now for several years, it was exacerbated, obviously, by the drought in beginning in 10, but mainly in 11 and 12. As you know, in Texas and Oklahoma, we took out about an additional million head of cows. Mm-hmm. So the oversupply, overcapacity, I should say, the overcapacity of packing and feeding that we've seen coming since the cattle inventory peaked in this country in the mid-70s has taken a fairly significant toll in this last year with the closure of the Cargill plant. Of course, first there was the Emporia, the plant in Emporia, Kansas, and now we have the Cargill plant in Plainview. And as you note, Cargill will close one of their feed yards in Lockney, Texas, sometime next year. And when you add, Ron, the other feed yards that have closed as a result of the economic pressures and then this closure of Cargill back in February of this year, you know, there's a few hundred thousand head of capacity in our part of the country that have come out. Similar things are happening in Kansas. Similar things are happening in eastern Colorado. So the industry is right-sizing. It is painful. It is very painful to see that go on. But until we get that supply-demand situation on capacity aligned, we'll continue to see that. We hope we're getting close. There is some discussion that there'll be another plant. I don't think there's going to be another large plant in the Great Plains. Mm-hmm. There could be some plants around the periphery, but, you know, time will tell on that.
Well, this question has to do with price discovery. We've talked about that. your chairman, Mr. Olson, talked about the fact that we do have a study that's now ongoing. We talked about this earlier this year, the desire to have a study regarding price discovery and trying to figure out with this shrinking cash cattle market that's there, you know, less than 10,000 a lot of weeks now of actual cash cattle, how do you find the right price?
Very good question. A lot of people, not just in our part of the world, it's interesting when we talk to counterparts in the Midwest, even in Iowa and states that still are trading quite a few cattle, fairly significant percentage in negotiated trade. So we've got price discovery. We've also got value discovery. And I don't know that the old traditional live cattle negotiated trade will come back. It might. But let's not lose sight of the fact that there is still quite a bit of negotiation going on in the beef in some form or fashion. So there's still negotiation trying to get that price slash value discovery. As you know, Colorado State, as Chairman Olson mentioned, thanks to NCBA's leadership and some of the key cattle feeding state affiliates, have been moving forward with this study. Dr. Kuntz has been out in the country interviewing some people. I think he's even going to send an electronic survey at some point in time. Two of the major components that he's looking for, Ron, as you may remember, is what level of negotiated trade, whether it's live cattle or in the beef or what that animal is, needs to exist to get true value to price discovery. The other part of that study, maybe in some, well, in the minds of some cattlemen, is the more important part is what are our alternatives? And that's more, that may be more of a focus in our part of the world where the traditional live on the hoof negotiation took place, more so in the beef up north. But are there some other alternatives? Is it a futures based contract? Is it a box beef based contract? It could be any number of things. Some of those are good ideas. Some of those are bad ideas for a lot of different reasons. We want the study to include a review of those, the strengths and weaknesses, so that we as an industry can, producers, cattle feeders can say, okay, maybe we need to go in a different direction. It might not be on the hoof, live negotiated as we've known, but it'll still be a negotiated grid or something that allows the feeder to get a true price signal.